time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into Batter Up, the week of Monday, March 29th. Joe Patrick in with me, Caleb Johnson here for, well, as we're just 2 days away from Braves baseball. Joe, are you ready for some baseball that counts?
What a weekend it's been, Caleb. I mean, this was this weekend, these roster moves that came down, which we're going to talk about in the show today, were unexpected, I think, to say the least. At least on my end, I was not expecting some of these moves. Some of them are going to be controversial, I think. I think fans will take issue with some things. And I know there's the old meritocracy that in baseball, or lack thereof, that people take issue with, which I think is definitely coming into play here with in terms of the Braves having to deal around these options and things like that. But yeah, I'm getting way too into it. All that to say, it's been actually a pretty newsworthy weekend, which we all knew was coming, of course, ahead of opening day, but a lot to talk about today.
Well, you say you knew that it was coming. I think I had been operating on the basis of things were going to continue much like they had all off season, where this, and I don't know if you would agree with me, Joe, this has been like the most boring off season for the Braves in recent history.
Very much so. I mean, even going back to free agency was terrible because the Braves did a lot of their business. They did it early in that free agency period, signing Drew Smyly and Charlie Morton pretty much before any team had even made a move. And then we had that long period. And I don't know about you, but this spring training to me has just felt off. Like, I hope my bosses aren't listening to this, but like, you know, I've honestly watched less spring training this year, Braves spring training, than I've watched probably any other year, where I feel like other years I'm it's like more available. I don't know what the deal is, but I don't know if it's maybe just my interests or whatever have changed, but I'm really looking forward to honestly Thursday, just seeing this team. Cause I feel like I've hardly seen this team through this spring. And I think, yeah, it's just been like a weird, lackadaisical, that's not the right word, but it's just been a weird feeling this spring.
No, I completely agree. I think you talk about, look, and we've bounced it around here on Batter Up before, the fact that, yes, the games this spring are so difficult to be able to watch. And then I think there's an added layer to watching Braves baseball this spring when they are on Fox Sports, or what is about to become Bally Sports. When they are on there, it's usually the opposing team's broadcast, and I just get so annoyed with having to listen to how another team's broadcast, who isn't familiar with the team and is still basing generalizations and making comments based on, honestly, information that's like 2 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, it gets so tiresome when I can actually catch a game that it makes me want to watch less. Like it turns into Sunday afternoon golf where I'm just like, I'm gonna fall asleep to this. I can't focus.
Yeah,
so I am with you that I'm ready to be able to watch them, for one, which it's still not easy to do. Still going to have to use the parents login, you know, to be able to watch on AT&T TV. However, it's nice that like I keep saying that these count, and we can take something substantial away from what we're seeing, rather exactly than where we come into the season making assumptions, and we can honestly jump right into some of the decisions that have been made over the past 72 hours, where Bryce Wilson gets sent down to Gwinnett. Johan Camargo gets sent down to Gwinnett. And William Contreras goes and follows along. The other two that will likely surprise some people are one of the big free agent signings, or I say big in quotation marks, free agent signings of the offseason was Jake Lamb. So, you know, bringing him in from Arizona and then bringing in a veteran guy like Jason Kipnis. And neither of those guys are on the team now.
Yeah, I didn't realize how bad it had gotten with Jake Lamb. I was just reading Mark Bowman's article today, just kind of recapping all these roster moves. Jake Lamb struck out 32% of his plate appearances this spring. That is how you get cut when you signed a major league deal. coming into spring training. I mean, that is just unsustainable. You can't carry that into the regular season. I was, you know, it was surprising to me when the news came down that they were going with a four-man bench, at least to start the season. I don't expect it to stay with four at four for very long. But then, like, when you think about it, it makes sense because of what I just said with Jake Lamb, and Johan Camargo clearly hasn't done anything to make you think that his bat is going to be helpful really at all. So the moves make sense. And I think the Braves have just essentially done what they can to fill these spots. But clearly, I mean, something that we talked about, we did the Braves preview show yesterday on 99, which should be appearing at some point on the website, if it's not already. Which is that they will have to address this at some point. I think relatively soon. They need to do it soon because this bench is going to be very important in a season when you don't have the DH and you're going to be using these guys more often than you did last year. I mean, maybe you could get by with this bench last year when you're just kind of using the same guys and you're not having to make those adjustments in game. But those positions are going to be even more important this year, and they really need to be addressed. Right now, I think Pablo Sandoval is like the best option you have to come in as a pinch hitter. I mean, he thankfully for the Braves, he's kind of like on a hot streak. I think he's got the leading batting average on the team this spring. And he can put the bat on the ball, which you always want from a pinch hitter. But other than that, Ender Inciarte, Harry Adrianza, I mean, he's been hitting the ball great this spring, but you know, you can't expect that to really continue. And Alex Jackson, who we all know has contact issues. So, it's just a kind of a crazy roster construction. But then again, you kind of understand why they're in this plight when you just think about it on an individual level.
Yeah, Joe, you alluded to us doing the Braves preview show yesterday, which was so much fun, just being able to hang out with you and Andy.
In person.
Yeah, and well, and having Andy just around, Andy Bunker, makes everything so much easier. I think we were talking about this after we did the show, where it was just everything flows so easily. You know, it just, I don't know, it's so much fun to just have a show like that where it's like hanging out with the boys and talking Braves baseball, but obviously making it substantial. And what we talked about then was the fact that this Braves bench to start the season has absolutely no power.
I mean, yeah, well, I forget the stat that Andy was tallying up. Like, they have something like two home runs from all of last season.
I was about to say, I thought it was the last two seasons.
Or maybe it's the last two seasons, yeah.
Yeah, well, counting the mini season of 2020 plus 2019, none of these guys have pop. When you talk about Pablo Sandoval, who was a guy who, how he made it as a San Francisco Giant and later got a big contract from the Boston Red Sox, was the fact that, you know, he had pop and he was big, strong guy. Well, he's later in his career now. And
kind of a slap hitter type.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, he's making contact, and he obviously made decent contact the spring, which is how he ends up as a bench spot. Then you turn to Adrianza, who you're not looking to get power from a guy like him. You're looking for him to be a backup, whether at second or at short, you know, a utility guy, mm-hmm. much like you were wanting from Johan Camargo, but you didn't get enough from Camargo to make him part of this team. Then were you going to get power from Ender Inciarte? Absolutely not.
No.
You know, the guy is filling a fourth roster bench spot because, as Andy said yesterday, he's getting paid $9 million a year or for this year. And then you turned to Alex Jackson, who only made the roster because he's not as good as William Contreras. Like, that's if we're totally honest with ourselves, the only way that he made the roster was because he's not as talented as Contreras, who they apparently want. I had talked myself into Contreras is going to be a part of this team.
You convinced me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because the with minor league season not starting till May, and then being able to sit on the bench next to Travis d'Arnaud and have those conversations and get a little bit of playing time, I thought was going to be enough that they said, let's make this move. However, they were like, no, let's go with the less talented guy who is a better defensive catcher. And Snit alluded to this in some post-game press conferences where he's like, yeah, I think Contreras needs to work on his you know, his work behind the plate, which is fine. However, he's going now to play against his own teammates in the alternate right, training site.
I guess we're still calling it an alternate site.
Yeah,
I don't even know what the technical term is for it now.
Major League Baseball, I feel like, has not given us the official stamp of, like, this is what we're calling things.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, they're still not willing to come out and say that we're not going to have the designated hitter. And we all know that that's not going to happen. So it's just, yeah, with all of these things going on, having a Pablo Sandoval and how do you pronounce Adrianza's first name?
I think it's like a Erie. Like, I don't think that A-Erie. You actually okay. pronounce the H. I mean, don't okay. take my word for it, but it's no. something like that. It's like yeah, Erie.
Okay, because it's one of those things. I know at some point there's going to be a sports A-R-A flash.
Or something. That, yeah.
yeah. There's going to be a sports flash sports that you or I have to do. And I loathe mispronouncing people's names. I like getting their names right. But between Sandoval, Adrianza, Alex Jackson, Ender Inciarte, this is a bench made up of guys who really made the roster for either defense or just because they can put the ball in play. There is no one who's coming up in the eighth or ninth inning pinch hitting for the pitcher because, oh yes, we have that going on this year again.
Honestly, I feel like I would take William Contreras as a hitter over probably any of these guys except for Sandoval. Like, Sandoval would still be my first pinch hitter off the bench, but then it would probably be Contreras. And the whole minor league season being pushed back really throws a big wrinkle into this. And I really don't understand fully, like, what the Braves' thinking was in making some of these moves with respect to that minor league season, because to your point, it's not like you're having William Contreras go down and, you know, be catching in competitive games and playing actual baseball games every day. In the meantime, he's not going to be doing that. He's going to be playing maybe some simulated games or, you know, whatever they do at that training site. But, you know, and same goes with a guy like Bryce Wilson, who was optioned down there, who, you know, we would normally think would be getting this start, but instead they've got this off day, so they're able to throw this bullpen game. And, you know, maybe that's just to try to, you know, I think what they're doing is they're trying to preserve some depth by putting these guys who don't have any options, just keeping them on the opening day roster. That's like guys like Grant Dayton, Luke Jackson, and just trying to get as much out of them as you can before, you know, you pivot kind of to a new strategy. I would be shocked if either Grant Dayton or Luke Jackson ends the season as an Atlanta Brave. If either one does, I think that that's good news. It probably means that they've just not done anything to that would make the Braves want to part with them. But yeah, the whole minor league situation, I feel like, complicates all of this in a way that we can't even, like, we can only speculate about, like, why they're doing these things, because we don't know the full story of what's going on those sites, what their plans are for these players at these training sites. So it's all kind of shrouded in a bit of mystery, I feel like, at the moment.
Yeah, I was about to say smoke and mirrors is the kind of the classic trope that I think of when it comes to these things, where if these guys were playing in minor league in the minor league system and things were going normally, they would be eyeballs on them. There is a fan, there is a journalist who's going to be sitting in a press box in Gwinnett in Mississippi, wherever it might be, traveling around to follow these guys to see how well they're doing. And now you can't do that. You're going to have to take the word of, I think this happened with Dave O'Brien when he was trying to get some information on Mike Soroka, when he was like, an MLB official who was standing by the gate, who was looking through binoculars, you know, it seemed like at least one of those bizarre
tickets for that tree. You know, ever seen Angels in the Outfield?
Great reference. But it's this odd moment of, you don't know what information to take away from. And it also, I think in that respect, makes it more difficult for a team who's looking to trade for any of the players who might be in the alternate training site, which was an issue that we saw in 2020, where you had to take scouting information from the team itself to really know what was going on with guys. And so to Joe, to your point of, some of these guys, it appears, at least, because otherwise it makes no sense why Grant Dayton, Luke Jackson make this roster and a guy like Bryce Wilson doesn't, and they decide to, they're going to go through the rotation first time around until they get to the fifth hole And then Max Fried will start again because of days off, because that the second game of the season, our second day of the season, is an off day.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have this bullpen game.
The bullpen game will actually take place between Max Fried's second start and who would it be? Charlie Morton's second start. That's when the game will be,
yes.
Correct?
Yeah. Yes. So, but for that to for them to go with this decision that, hey, we're going to use, you know, an opener, for them to make that move to preserve a Grant Dayton or a Luke Jackson is one of those, if he's not good enough now, or if he's not good enough in a week and a half from now, when you're going to designate him for assignment because you're going to move up another guy, he's not good enough now. Like, I right. just, why so, put him on the opening day roster? I don't get it.
Here's my question. You know, so they're going to go with this bullpen game that will reportedly, I mean, it seems like the consensus is that Waskar Yanoa is going to start that game. Why not just have Bryce Wilson in this opening day roster instead of Waskar Yanoa? And like, why not just, like, what's the difference? I'm not sure exactly what the play is here. Like, it seems like it's, what's the phrase? Too cute by half or something like that. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if this actually works out for the Braves or not. But I just feel for Bryce Wilson because I feel like he just got screwed out of, you know, in the long term, he'll get over it. But it's like, it's an honor to, you know, it means something for these guys, I think, to be on the opening day roster from day one. He's not going to get that opportunity.
Well, and to that, it's the idea that, like, Bryce Wilson had a good spring.
Yeah, I know. Like, he pitched his way onto this team for sure.
Yeah, and so I talked about this before, and this idea of Bryce Wilson was a guy who I think got better when he got around Ian Anderson, because Ian Anderson looked so great right out of the gate for the Braves last year that Bryce Wilson being around him, and I think just have, I don't know, maybe it was conversations or just watching Ian Anderson pitch, who's a guy who's just as young as he is in this Braves organization, watching him pitch well and have the confidence to go out there. I think Bryce Wilson's whole issue was a lack of confidence. And then we saw that in the postseason, mm-hmm. and he looked really good. And then he's had a solid spring. I do think he's earned the right to be on this opening day roster. So not having him there is messing with his confidence, I think. And I think it's a terrible idea because I think it could be detrimental to what you see from Bryce Wilson later on in the season, if you do, because then there's this whole thing that you, Joe, brought into the show that we did yesterday, which is, are we playing all of these games so that we can get Mike Soroka back in the second time through the rotation?
I was just going to bring him up because he is the guy who is kind of linked to Bryce Wilson in this way, because of course Bryce Wilson is making the roster, or he was, you know, competing for this starting rotation spot. That is Mike Soroka's spot. And yes. Mike Soroka obviously is on his way back from an Achilles injury. He is scheduled, according to Brian Snicker, to pitch tomorrow against the Red Sox. Don't know how long he'll be out there, but it will be interesting to see if he comes up during a bat. I don't know if he'll bat during that game. I don't even know if they'll have a DH in there or not against the Red Sox, but we'll be interesting to see what he does, what he looks like. It'll be kind of our first glimpse at him. Apparently, by all reports, he's pitched in a few simulated games now and is looking good, you know, running off the mound, doing all those kinds of things. Brian Snicker said that the last step for him and the one thing that he hasn't done is, you know, step in the batter's box and able. And it's so funny how Brian Snicker just says, like, just defend yourself. If just defend yourself in the batter's box, like, be able to move out of the way of a pitch inside or something like that. I've joked that he needs to be like Henry Rollingarner when he comes in Rookie of the Year, who just like stands in the very back corner of the batter's box and just watches the pitches come in. Seriously, I wonder, like, in Major League Baseball, if it will ever. Well, I guess they won't get to this point because they're going to get rid of the DH. Thank God. But like, just like concede the out.
We
just
be think. Like,
well, yeah. I wish you could just like concede the out, because it was like, if Mike Soroka is going up there and literally standing in the back corner of the batter's box, what if the other team was like, we'll intentionally walk him just to like just to see what happens. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how he looks tomorrow, because again, he has been linked. And then something we were talking about on the show yesterday is that the reporting around Soroka has been that, you know, I think the initial timetable, people were saying the beginning of May, you know, miss a month and you miss April, you come back in May. And now you just see the time frame being phrased as, you know, middle of April, mid late April. And that's what's kind of got me wondering if they do think that the middle of April is a possibility for him to come back. And on the current schedule, Bryce Wilson's first start, I think, would be April 13th. I think that would be when his rotation slot comes up. So would he pitch in that one time and then, or two times, and then make way for Soroka? I don't know. What are your thoughts on Soroka?
I see, whenever it comes to a guy who's dealing with an injury, I am always, always on the side of be cautious, take the adequate amount of time that you need to heal. Now, is that always the best route? Maybe not, because, you know, it's one of those, it's so difficult to speculate on a guy when I don't myself know what he's going through in physical therapy and training and how strong his Achilles is back from this injury. Because it is an Achilles injury, I get, I guess, extra concerned based on it seems like that's something that could rupture again if you're not careful with it. And we've seen basketball player Kevin Durant, who had this exact thing happen. He rushed back for Golden State to come back in the playoffs and then, you know, tears it again and is down for a year and a half at that point. Now, granted, Joe, you and I have talked about this. Mike Soroka is not a basketball player. He's not having to jump on it a ton. It's just one of those, I don't know, it's something in the back of my head that I'd rather just kind of wait on him. But in the same respect, if he knows his limits and if he knows, you know, what he can't do and where he's not comfortable planting his foot or a speed that he's not comfortable running, in which, as a pitcher, thankfully he's not having to do a whole lot of running, whether or not it's just to like cover first or something like that. And I don't know how you feel about this, Joe, but I guess because he is a pitcher, I am more willing to see him come back early or when he feels he's ready, based on if he gets beat running out a play at first. I don't think we'll put that on the Achilles. I think we would just kind of brush that off as like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, not capable of that right now. Yeah.
Yeah, but if his push off or what is this? Is this right leg?
I don't even remember. I don't even know.
That's what I was trying to say. Push off or plant foot. I can't remember. But whichever it is, if there was some kind of, I don't know, inkling amongst that part of his mechanics where it was like, it's still not feeling quite right, then I'm like, absolutely
not. Of course, 100%.
However, yeah. But if that is feeling fine and it's just like, not sure how far we can push it, then sure, let's see him. April 13th seems so early. I had my mind set on May.
Yeah.
But if you're not going to mess around with Bryce Wilson, because I mean, that's another thing. Bring Bryce Wilson up for a game, and if he pitches well, then you send him right back down. Like, oh,
right.
Then we're really just messing with guys here. And so there's a lot of decisions that the Braves have made and still have yet to make that have brought, I would say, some true excitement and debate to the season, whereas before it was kind of like, yeah, things are how they are.
You know, it's kind of funny to think about that we're debating whether Soroka should come back in mid-April or, you know, early May, mid-May, that kind of thing. When he got hurt, I think August 3rd was the date that he tore his Achilles. And we were like, at that point, it was like, man, is he even going to be able to pitch at all next year?
Out for a year.
And now
I remember us talking about when his injury happened, it was like maybe by the postseason of 2021.
Yeah. So it does feel like we're kind of, we're debating this, although we should be feeling very fortunate no matter kind of when he returns. The interesting thing, and I'm going to kind of go over this again. I know we've talked about this on the show, but I think it's worth pointing out, just kind of going over it again, how he's described his injury, which is that the Achilles right now is not the area of concern when it comes to, you know, his return. The problem with an Achilles injury is that for it to heal, you have to completely immobilize like the leg and therefore the body. Like you can't do any sort of like walking or anything like that on it. So when that happens, all the other tendons and ligaments atrophy, they all get weaker, and you have to build up everything in that leg from the hip down to the knee, down to the ankle. And so that's really the injuries that they're worried about, are these other joints where the muscles and ligaments may not be as strong as they once were. And then when he's putting the, you know, the regular torque and everything back on him, the regular force, that could present an issue. Now, the other interesting part of this and what he described, Soroka did, to media is that he said, like, you know, I could wait if I wanted to wait until I was 100% like back to normal, back to the way I was feeling before the injury. That won't be like until October. Like that's why the Achilles, it's a tough injury to come back from. It takes a long time for that reason. But to your point, what you're saying, like about KD, and he even referenced KD when he was describing this, he was like, I don't need to be able to do that. You know, I can pitch. He talked about, you know, the motion, the pitching motion is a team effort in terms of all of your joints and body work that has to kind of go together. And so the motion of pitching is not putting enough stress on the Achilles that it's going to be an issue. The issue is at what point does the opportunity that you're the opportunity cost become greater than the risk? Like at what point does holding him out actually harm you more than the risk that it would be to bring him back in? So that's the kind of the balance that the Braves are dealing with. But again, fortunate that it will probably be no later than mid-May that he comes back. So very fortunate position that the Braves are in. And again, it will be very interesting to see how all of this stuff in the pitching rotation shakes out over the course of the year. Because one of the things we were talking about in the preview show yesterday was that this season is going to feel like the longest season of these players' yeah. lives, coming off a 60-game season and then going 162. So for a long season like that, you're going to need all the bodies that you have on deck, because players are probably going to get hurt or feel fatigued or things like that. And so it's great to have a guy like Bryce Wilson that you can call on in the middle of a season, or a Kyle Wright that you can call on in the middle of a season to come up and make some starts. What I'm curious about is how those players will deal with that situation where they come up in a position where it's like, okay, I'm coming up to fill a gap for a few weeks, you know, and then I'll be back. And it doesn't really feel like you have that opportunity to really stamp, you know, make your stamp on the major league level. So it'll be very interesting to see how all this shakes out. I wonder how many starting pitchers the Braves will go through this year. I think in the 60-game season last year, they went through like 16 starting pitchers or something crazy like that. But yeah, I mean, they will need more than five pitchers. It's very easy for us to just kind of project, like, you know, five pitchers that are going to be going every week right now. Of course, they will need more than that, but it's just going to be a very kind of dicey situation. You just hope some of these young guys, Wright and Wilson, can kind of roll with the punches here and just kind of come up when their number's called and produce.
So look at the other guys in this rotation, because it's one of those, I feel like, Joe, you and I haven't spent, and honestly don't really need to spend, a whole lot of time talking about Max Fried, just because he's
our warm blanket.
Yeah, he is the model of consistency. You know, he is old, dependable guy that had an incredible 2020 season. And I said yesterday, I expect nothing but him to potentially get even better this year, and his growth and him getting his respect of being this team's ace. Cause I think Andy asked you yesterday, even when Soroka comes back and is, you know, completely healthy, however you want to put that, do you see he or Max Fried as your ace? And if I remember correctly, you said Max Fried.
I said Fried. Yeah.
And I agree with you. However, it's just, it feels like we haven't discussed him a whole lot because of he looked great last year, looked great again this spring. And so then you start going down the line and it's like, okay, who's the next guy? Oh yeah, Charlie Morton, who the Braves brought in on a free agent deal, was a former Brave years ago. I feel like there are kids watching baseball at this point who weren't alive when Charlie Morton was was last pitching for the Braves, which, you know, it's just one of those.
I remember tailgating with friends in the parking lot before a Charlie Morton start. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it brings back glory days of like high school.
Well, I just thinking of the sentiment of like the fact of there are honestly, I mean, there are, I think of like Knox Bardeen, who has a son who is like, was he alive?
Yeah, when probably
Charlie
not.
Morton was last pitching with the Braves, but now he can really watch baseball and have a love for the game. I want to say that to Charlie in like a press conference, just see, you know, just get the wheels turning. But Charlie Morton, you want to talk about model of consistency, 0.0 ERA this spring.
Just like, no run, just a perfect spring.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah. Well, you talk about no big deal. I feel like until I saw the stat on Instagram yesterday, that was when I was like, oh yeah, he has it this spring. You know, I mean, one from not watching a ton of Braves this spring, but just mainly, I feel like that's something that would have been talked about, and maybe it was a little bit of the like having a no hitter going where you just don't discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
But after his start yesterday against the Rays, in which the Braves lost like 16-5,
yeah,
because of Chad Sobotka and a couple
like
other
a
guys.
12-run inning or something.
Yeah, fell apart towards the end. But and that would cause you to overlook the fact that Charlie Morton continued to look great, continued to look all the bit worth the free agent contract that he was given to be what I assume is the number two. And he is like, the Braves have finally brought in a guy who's not only going to give the wisdom and coach up the other guys, but is actually going to play and potentially pitch very well. Something that we didn't get last year from a guy like Cole Hamels.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting to me with Charlie Morton is you asked Snit how he did, and he's like, oh, it's phenomenal. Full of praise. When you ask Charlie Morton again, he hasn't given up a earned run this spring. And he's just like, you know, I could have done this. I need to do this. But yeah. He's like still nipping it, which you love to see. You don't want. Yeah. It's good to see a guy who's a veteran like that still trying, you know, nitpicking his game. And when the reporters are like, man, that must have felt good out there, and he's like, yeah, well, I could have done this better, I could have done that better. I think that really shows that like his head is really in this. I think that he's just the perfect signing from like every single angle you would have thought of. And he's, again, I said this yesterday, he wasn't the guy that was really on my radar for the Braves as a free agent signing heading into this offseason. But yeah, I mean, if he can stay healthy, that's like, you know, fingers crossed. But if he does, just really think he's going to be an invaluable piece. And, you know, he can be a piece that it depends on how the Braves or, you know, let's assume just for this conversation's sake that the Braves make the playoffs. Who knows how they get there, but Charlie Morton would clearly be a big piece there. And what really excites me about this Braves team is that I really feel like now, especially with this starting rotation they would have coming into the playoffs, where you've got Max Fried, Mike Soroka, Charlie Morton, and Ian Anderson, like that's the kind of starting rotation I feel like that can lead you through to a World Series. Like that's a legit weapon for a team that's heading into a postseason. And we all know, you know, we've seen it a million times. If you have a rotation like that, that just gets hot and is just locking teams down, then you can just ride that. And that's what really gives me a lot of confidence with the Braves. I know overall, I think people are kind of frustrated with this opening day roster, the fact that it's so lopsided. It does clearly have some holes and things like that. But I do think that this team is set up to adjust accordingly how they need to. We've seen Alex Anthopoulos do that in past seasons. In 2019, he went out and just recreated the bullpen at the trade deadline. And I think that this team is really set up to have that postseason run. You know, like if you look at teams that win the World Series, a lot of them aren't necessarily favored to win the World Series on opening day, but they build themselves a roster that is capable of producing in those moments when it matters and in that format of the playoffs that's so different than the regular season. I just think that the Braves are kind of set up to do well in the regular season, but they can also adjust and tinker things to really fine tune themselves to have that success in the postseason.
Joe, another guy that I did want to go to that is a part of this rotation that I have, if there's ever a guy on this team that I've been excited about coming into this spring,
it's Drew Smiley.
No, it is not Drew Smiley. No, well,
I haven't convinced you yet, but one day we'll get there. No, sorry, go ahead.
You have it. And well, too, but look, I'll get to Drew Smiley, and that I made a claim yesterday that I think after I said it, I was like, was that too harsh? And I was like, no, sometimes you make predictions, whether they come through or not. I'm going to stand by this one, and it's detrimental to the Braves. So that's not great, obviously. But I said yesterday that I was like, I don't know that Drew Smiley is going to be a part of this team when they get to the postseason. I don't know that he's going to be there by the end of the year. However, when you look at his spring numbers, and we talked about this before we jumped on here, Drew Smiley is what I think had 3 starts, and his second start was what was rough. I think he gave up 5 earned and got a lot of conversation, and I was one who was like, oh, there you go. There's a guy who I wasn't convinced when the Braves signed him, and he's given up 5. And I think this is headed in the wrong direction. However, he fixed it in his next start, and he will start tomorrow, I think. And yet I have been so in on Ian Anderson, who is a young guy the Braves were waiting for so long to bring up, finally did towards the end of last year. And he looked incredible, had a bit of a step back or whatever you may call it, had a bad start in the playoffs.
Mm.
And, you know, was essentially a part of how the Braves fell apart against the Dodgers. But it seemed like he's just got so much potential, and he's another one like Max Fried, who I was just super excited about because I thought this is a guy who can be a part of this rotation for a long time and make it one of the best rotations in all of baseball. However, I have been overlooking the fact that Ian Anderson, outside of his first start, has not had the greatest spring, because he did pitch today 2 2/3 innings against the Red Sox. He gave up 4 runs, including 3 home runs. Less than ideal in your last start before the season starts.
And that's really interesting, because the home runs were always something that he was extraordinarily good at, not giving up the home run ball. Yes. When he came, I don't remember off the top of my head how many he had, and I don't have it pulled up, but he did not give up many home runs last year. And part of that is because he was so good at keeping the ball down in the zone. And he just didn't make those mistakes out over the plate and up. I do wonder if maybe some of those home runs are because he's trying to maybe expand his repertoire and do a little bit more of that. And he's just kind of, that's part of working out the kinks. But I'm not worried about Ian Anderson in the long run. Maybe he does get off to a slow start this season and gives up the long ball a little bit more than he was last year. But I'm still not that concerned about him.
So he gave up a home run on March 13th. He gave up one on March 24th. So his last start. And then today he gave up 3. So that's kind of like his last 3 starts haven't been necessarily great. He went 4 1/3, gave up 2. He went 6 innings and gave up 4 runs. And then today, like I said, went very short, 2 2/3. And gave up 4 runs, including the 3 home runs. So, I mean, I'm, it's one of those, seeing the numbers in front of my face is what got me to be like, oh no, like, ooh, I was really, really set on this guy being one of the Braves staples, and not saying that he can't, because we are talking about spring numbers. There's all kinds of different things that go into that. It is just, I thought he was going to be right there next in line of, you know, it is just going to make this rotation that much better and not be a liability, and yet not the greatest spring. And so it is something to watch out for.
The good news with him is he's a level-headed guy. He reminds me of Max Fried in the, just like his kind of demeanor, at least with the media. And so that just gives me a little bit of hope or confidence that, you know, he's able to take all this stuff in stride and just kind of use it to help him refine his game. Maybe Drew Smiley can help him, offset a little bit of the early Ian Anderson bump. So I want to actually go through Drew Smiley real quick. I want to go through his numbers. You know, I mentioned kind of briefly yesterday on the show that the poor numbers that he's had in his career have basically been down to an injury that he ended up having to have Tommy John surgery on. So listen to this. And when he first came up with the Tigers in 2012, he had a 3.99 ERA. Pretty good. Pretty good for somebody who's just coming up. In 2013, 76 innings, he had a 2.37 ERA. In 2014, in 153 innings pitched, he had a 3.24 ERA. In 2015, he had a 3.11 ERA. And then 2016, 17, and 18 is where things started getting bad. He was a 4.88 ERA in 2016. And then didn't even pitch until 2019. 2019, again, coming back from Tommy John, even worse. That was his worst season yet. 114 innings and the 6.24 ERA. But last year with the Giants, I mean, only 26 innings pitched, but a 3.42 ERA and an xFIP of only 2.56, a FIP of 2.01 last year. He was phenomenal. That's the kind of numbers that Alex Anthopoulos saw, I think, that made him want to bring him in. And in fact, Alex Anthopoulos, when he signed him, he said that they actually wanted him last year. They wanted him to be on that team last year, and he would have been a really great contributor for them considering how much they needed the starting pitching. But they weren't able to get a deal done. But he's clearly been a guy that they've been focused on. They like guys who are just coming off this Tommy John surgery. I think the Braves like guys who are coming off the Tommy John and then have a bad year because they know that the command and control doesn't quite come back until like a year following. So hopefully that's what we see from Drew Smyly. I've talked about this. I'm like way more high on him than pretty much anybody else I know. And I'm now hoping to God that I'm right, because otherwise I'm going to have to eat a lot of stuff I don't like to eat.
Yeah, well, I think my issue with Drew Smyly was the fact that the Braves are when they signed him, I felt like that should have been a get a steal on a guy. I felt like they overpaid for him. You talk about catching a guy right at the right time after having an injury and maybe looking bad, but them doing some baseball projections on him and thinking he can have an uptick, but it was like, no, it seems like you paid him for the uptick that he hasn't had yet. And that's why I think there was a moment coming into spring where I was like, I don't even know if he's going to,
I think you're right that there was like a little bit of a gamble. It was like prospecting where it's like, okay, we're going to pay up for him. And we hope that he hits our numbers that we're projecting for him. If he does that, then this is going to pay off. But obviously, you know, not everything's certain.
Yeah. Now, before we do get out of here, there is one guy that I want to talk about, just because out of all of the names of relievers that we went through, of guys who we thought were going to make this Braves team, I can tell you for sure, Joe, neither you nor I were talking about Nate Jones.
Who?
Exactly. Nate Jones, 35 years old. I think that was what I caught you off guard when we were talking about him. Is you hear a guy who you've never heard before, and you're thinking, oh, must be some young prospect kind of guy. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That decided to work, you know, like worked out or whatever. No. Nate Jones has been around the block a minute. Started off his career with the White Sox organization, was traded to the Reds, and then was ultimately not picked up, and I think was released in spring. And then the Braves signed him, put him down in Gwinnett, and instead liked enough of his stuff that they decided to make him a part of this Braves opening day roster. And he's going to be a part of this team, at least for a little bit. I'm just so lost at, I mean, his numbers look good, Joe.
Yeah, they do.
But what?
I know. It's kind of funny because Carl Edwards Jr. was kind of the guy that we all thought was going to get the Nate Jones spot, where it's like a guy who's at least has a much more proven track record in the past. But when I look at it, you know, Carl Edwards Jr., his thing was he was walking guys a lot. And that is something that drives Snit absolutely crazy, especially when it's coming from a reliever. You just do not want relievers coming in and putting guys on base, and Nate Jones has not done that. I think in his last outing, he went inning and did walk a guy. But before that, he had pitched 6 1/3 innings and without a walk and only gave up 2 hits in that stretch. I mean, the guy's command has just been absolutely on point this spring. And sometimes when that happens, it's like you didn't think it was going to go this way, but what are you going to do? Let him go to some other team and pitch like that? You know, it's like you can't. You got to take a guy who's in that kind of form. And it, as an older player, it's like you can ride with Nate Jones until he shows you otherwise, and then you can, you know, part ways. But for now, you know, kudos to him.
Yeah, fair enough. It's just seemed like one of the most random signings.
Very random.
that the Braves have made, where it seemed like we could predict some things and sure be surprised by, you know, certain guys making the team or whatever. But I can certainly tell you Nate Jones was not on our radar as a guy that we thought was going to be a part of this team. I'm interested to see.
Nate Jones is on the roster. Johan Camargo's not, just like we all thought.
And it's perfect to bring up Johan Camargo as you know, we kind of wrap this thing up. Is he's a guy who I said yesterday, we were talking about Braves Wall Street, you know, guys whose stocks are rising and falling. And I said, is Johan Camargo a penny stock yet? Because I think there's just so little confidence in him to be anything other than a guy who's going to clearly spend some time down in Gwinnett.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear at this point the outlier in his career was the 2018 season, and everything else has been average at best. And the thing with Johan Camargo is you kind of need him to at least be solid with the glove, and he hasn't really proven to be that. Like, he really needed to prove that he was a better defensive player than Harry Adrianza, and he wasn't. He didn't prove to be that guy. And so if you're not the better infield glove, and Adrianza is also hitting better than you, there's just not a place. And so I don't really have a lot of hope that Johan Camargo is going to all of a sudden like find himself and come back. Maybe he does, but I think right now, as sad as it is to say, because you don't like to, you know, trash a player, or kind of, you know, do that kind of thing, but I just feel like we know what Johan Camargo is at this point, and there are better options.
Yeah. All right, Joe. Braves baseball is 2 days away. They get the season started against the Phillies on the road. Anything you want to add before we get out of here?
I just cannot wait. I cannot wait for that game. Cannot wait for the season. Can't wait for when we talk next week to have actual baseball to talk about. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah. Max Fried gets the opening day start for 3:30 first pitch, I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but we're excited to, once we are here a week from today, we will be talking about real live action from Braves baseball and start getting, you know, I'm sure start making early predictions already a couple of games in of what we can expect from the Braves this year as they start out against an NL East opponent who is at least going to be in talks to be, you know, towards the top of the NL East. That should be rather competitive, at least we hope this season. But thank you for everybody for watching on Facebook Live. Thank you if you're going to be listening to this later on in podcast form. For Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Have a great day. This is Batter Up.